No one ever talks about algo market fit and how like visual importance plays into launching your brand.
How do you think about differentiating yourself and actually building out a brand versus just making cool products that people just want to buy?
If you're planning to launch a brand, it's a 30 video framework to take you over like all the months from preparation to launch.
I want everything that I look at to have like this intention, the coloring, the fonts, whatever, it has to match this spot.
You really want to think about brand building in these three phases.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Sweat Equity. Today we got Oren again, third time, third appearance, three-peat.
Let's go. Do I hold the crown for appearance numbers?
I mean, we planned on doing this repeatedly with you. That was always the plan. It's like you're coming into Austin every month. Let's always figure out another way to do an episode together and do like one of those live builds.
Yep. So
that's what we got today. We're going to be doing essentially you're doing a 30-day sprint of videos on IG where you're going to show, or a 30-day series where you're going to show how to build a brand.
Yep.
Right. And I want to start with, I think something that was interesting in here that I've never really seen somebody talk about, but it is a thing. And I have it. Brian has it. Like Charles has it. We all have it, but nobody talks about it. And that's a builder mindset.
Yep.
And you have to have a builder. Yeah. You have to have a builder mindset before you even go into building something, because shit's tough. Shit's rough. It's not fucking easy. It's a pain in the ass. What is that?
Yeah, it's a way to think about things. Right. And so basically, it's this idea that every single thing that you look at, or every product that you see, brand that you look at, like having an intentional thought process around it. And you'll start to notice, like as you build and as you get into business, you start thinking like this kind of automatically, but it's a bit of a cheat code to start it almost beforehand.
Yeah.
Anytime that you see a product, you know, whether it's this book or certain water brand, or you go to a restaurant, pick a new shirt, whatever it is, you start to think about, okay, why do I like this or not like this? Like form an opinion about it to start. And then you begin to think about, okay, well, how was it made? You know, and then like, do you think this was made, you know, by a certain machine or an X or Y? And then like, if you don't know, you know, research that and be like, oh, you'll start to have this idea of like, oh, well, bottling is done this way, or hey, that's a three-axis CNC, or they did this with a mold. Begin to understand that like how everything gets brought into the world. And if you understand that, it's almost like a superpower where you're like, all right, I can, if I know how to do it, that means that I could technically do it at some point with the right resources, and you kind of really think through it. And the last step is, okay, well, how would I improve this? If I want to, you know, if I was going to launch my own thing, or if I was going to say, yeah, I think, how could I actually make a feature set or a marketing piece or whatever to actually make it better? And if you think about anything you see like that, you're just developed this understanding of the world around you that shows you angles that you can then succeed at in business.
What are some brands you've done that with, or products that you've done that with, where you look at it and you're like, okay, this was my product. Here's how I would change X. Here's how I would market this. I'd make these changes because this is what's happening in culture, and I can make it more relevant by doing X, Y, Z. Like, what are some products, brands you've done that with?
Yeah, so I think the, I think about this a lot. And so I think one of the things I look at a lot, food and beverage is one of the easiest ones where you begin to look at like, okay, here's this category. Okay, could you do you begin to look at it, can I do this cheaper, or can I change a brand to be more intentional towards a certain demographic? And if you really think like that, then you can start to be like, okay, is this a marketing play? Is this a purely like, if it tasted better, if it had these ingredients, if it didn't have a erythritol, whatever. There's a lot of like little tweaks you can make in that, which I like, because you can think very specifically and intentionally. But a big one around it is packaging. So in a similar space, like I have a business in Arizona where we have, it's a cannabis business. We do like a very specific type. And we made it an intentional like creative direction choice where like all these products are very commoditized there. And it's like, all right, we're going to make something with a look and feel that appeals to a certain consumer. Yeah. And there's only one other brand in the space, and they appeal to a different type of consumer. And you can literally just position slightly to a different way with essentially a same product. And that's something that like a marketer can really apply their expertise to, right? Versus a product person could be like, oh, I could do that cheaper, or oh, I could do that better.
Yeah. What are some of those things that you're tweaking on design or something to like, or how do you elevate or change this unboxing experience or the packaging experience where you are tailoring it towards a demographic?
Yeah. And I think that, so a couple things are the shareability of packaging experience is a big one, and or the reusability. It's funny, we had just done this survey.
Plug SurveyMonkey.
It was sponsored by SurveyMonkey. We had done a survey for Hyper where we had asked people about how they use packaging.
Yeah.
And we got about 500 people to do that. And it was interesting that about 73% of them had DM'd or messaged a photo of packaging to a friend recently, right? And then 50% or more than that, I think it was 55, had shared a photo of packaging on social media. And then it was another huge percent. It was like 90 that actually reused packaging for something. you know, basically taken, oh, I took this Stumptown cold brew bottle and it's a vase, whatever that looks like. And so I think the first look when you look at something is, okay, is this inherently shareable? Like, is this interesting enough or funny enough or clever enough or whatever it is, or premium enough that someone would want to share it with somebody else?
Yeah.
And then the second question is, okay, can I make this have a double life? And if you look at almost any category and do something like that, you have a bit of an edge.
I really like that. I've never thought about that. Letting the unboxing experience have a double life because it's so significant that they could use it in some other area of their life, right?
Yep.
So in that case, you're saying they take the cold brew bottle, they make a vase out of it. Are there any other examples that aren't like, because that's an obvious one, right? Yeah. I feel like there's so many TikTok videos for that. Are there more obvious ones where you take something that's not ordinary and you're able to give it a double life through the packaging?
You know, that's an interesting question. Well, I think you've also seen them. I remember one, there was like, it was, I thought it was a bottle or a bag, but like it's a seed as well. Like you plant it in the ground and it grows into something. Like there's a lot of room to get off the wall with that. But I mean, it's just having any level of intention, right?
We were just talking about intention and brands that put intention into like the little things that most people just ignore, or they just do it because you have to do it. Yep. Something as simple as adding a CTA or a headline, but being intentional about doing it in one way or changing like the headline a little bit so that it's just more artistic and it attracts a certain kind of individual. How do you go about, or what are the things that you think it's most important to put intention into? Is it social content? Is it your website?
Well, I think I think there's just two ways to look at it. One is like, do you have a framework with which you can apply intention as a brand? Do you have a set of things where you're like, hey, everything we do, we're funny. So we always have like a joke element, like, or we're dramatic. We're like Midday Squares is a good example where there's always something extra.
Yeah.
Right. And so like, do you have a framework with which you can apply it? And if you have a framework, that makes it easy because you can look at everything through that lens, and a good brand will kind of have that lens to define it. Like Nike, another good example where everything's always epic. Like there's always like some greater story being told. It makes you feel inspired in almost any moment, from the tagline to the art direction to the product that you get. If you don't have that theme figured out, or you're just trying to work through it as it goes, it's really just about having any degree of intention. So what we had talked about prior was everything you do, whether you're posting a photo on social media, whether you're making a decision on a landing page, just make one interesting choice. Like that's like basically the difference between zero and one is like, am I doing anything that has the potential to stand out or that elevates this from being normal? And if you can ask yourself that question in everything you do, from your packaging or your branding, et cetera, and you can do it, you're immediately doing a better job than just the standard things that are out there.
What are some examples of those intentionality of like, you know, changing a small thing in a photo? Like, what does that look like? What is that minute thing versus just, because that's like, I don't want to say it's surface level, but you were referencing George Heaton and how he does it.
Like, yeah, exactly. What does he do? He posts carousels of like day-to-day life, right?
Yeah.
Four photos. But every single one of them is like, seems like they're just posting normal photos, but they're all art directed. One of the things I love about him is when you see him interacting with Represent gear, he's often styling it. There'll be a model and he'll be like adjusting something. And that's, you've seen it enough that you know that's a trope, or he doesn't just want to stand there, you know, or just be like, oh, I'm at the shoot. He's participating. He's doing the action. I think it's a very like intentional choice. And even it's like, it's something as little as like, you know, if you are like, every single carousel you post on Instagram, like the last photo is a meme. That's an intentional choice, but it's a choice that gives you an extra reach because people get to the end and laugh or have more likelihood to share. Like there's just all these little individual decisions that I think can make a huge difference. Like even with the packaging, like, you know, Snapple having a fact, you know, like all of those things are there's either you have something or you don't.
Post builder's mindset, like and you're doing this, are you getting like mood boards? Are you building out, what are you building out to inspire kind of those intentional decisions? Cause like, I can tell you right now, I had the conversation with Marketing Examine, I want to lean towards a luxury streetwear style. So I have, if you go to my office now, it is nothing but mood boards and images pinned all around because I want everything that I look at to have like this intention, the coloring, the fonts, whatever, it has to match this vibe.
Yeah.
What are you doing to make sure that you, like you're seeing your brand through that lens of intention?
And so, you know, it's interesting. I have, it's not a plug because I don't have any deal with them. I use this app called Milanote that works kind of how my mind
Milanote's
works.
Milanote's great.
And I'll basically have, for every brand or project, I have like this big sprawling board of different stuff. Yeah. And it will be like, we'll have a video segment, we have like an art direction segment, photo, campaigns, product, packaging, whatever. And they'll all have like clusters of photos and design ideas. And I think just like pulling references. So whenever I try not to scroll social, and I try to scroll Pinterest and Arena instead a lot. And so like, I'm just collecting references all the time. And then I share a lot of references with people in chats and they share with me. And it's like, I always then put those into these clusters for every project. Like one where we're working on like a gaming project now, where we just have to, I have any reference that like is remotely like cyberpunk or whatever, like goes into this segment. And then when you actually go make those decisions, you have like a framework to pull up and be like, oh, what was interesting about this? What was interesting about that? And can go from anything from an angle of the photo to a, like how someone did an emboss on a box. But like, if you have references, it makes it easier to actually go check and work through. It's like going through your bookmarks. I feel like a lot of people are sitting there being like, how do I come up with a good idea? Or let's go look at this company. When if you're just accumulating all that and compartmentalizing it, you have some level of routine about that. You're giving yourself a framework to make intentional choices for your creativity.
And where from taking those examples and everything that you're saving and bookmarking, how are you now taking that and actually applying it to your brand? This one that you're going to start, you're doing a 30-day sprint.
Yeah.
And you're teaching people how to launch a brand over the next 30 days through this series. How do you take inspiration and actually segue it into your brand? Cause that's where it gets difficult. Where
that's a good example. Cause sometimes you can be too inspired. Right. And I think there's a huge clutch of that right now. But okay. A good example is like, so this brand that I'm working on, where I'm wearing the shirt for right now is the, I put a lot of 70s like car exploitation movie imagery and posters and stuff like that on the mood board.
Yeah.
And when we went to do colorways, like we pulled a lot from those posters. Like there's a lot of like dual color stuff. And we were like, okay, it's not like the exact same shades, but it's like, there was one that was like a red and cream that we basically just adopted slightly into the majority of like the looks. And that's a good example of like a cross pollination where like, I'm not like redoing that movie poster style, but I'm taking like the colors from it, making it kind of work for the brand. And we wouldn't have ever chosen that style without that reference. And I think that applies for even like content. Like I have a bunch of bookmarked content that isn't anything like what it looks like for that brand. But I'm like, okay, if I applied our themes and our visual ideas in the same content style, like that's a thing. And in this 30-day brand thing I'm doing, which is like 30 videos online that, you know, kind of form a lot of the foundations of like what you look to start a brand. Like that was another one where when I'm thinking about that series, like what little things could we draw from? And a lot of them I'm doing like cold opens. Like I'll be in a different place than my usual content. And then I'm like turning to the camera and being like, here's this. And it's just like one intentional choice, right?
What's next on? Okay. So you understand the builder mindset. You understand you got to be intentional when you're building this brand. What's the next thing are you doing? Are you building a site? Are you building an email list?
It's working out that plan. I like the calendar. I think is probably like the biggest next thing is people don't quite realize how long it takes. And it's like, sometimes it can be faster than you expect. Sometimes it can be longer, but people sort of just start doing the actions without that plan, or they plan and they don't quite understand the phases. And so I look at it now, when I did this video on planning, it was February, and I was like, hey, if you want to launch a brand by Christmas, you kind of have to start like next week, right? Yeah. If you realistically want to launch a good that if you're doing like a beverage and it requires a bunch of formulation, it might be longer. If you're doing something that you're making in the USA, it might be quicker. But like for most cases, it's going to take that amount of time. I really like to have that calendar out of like, what things can I work on and what do you work on simultaneously? Because I feel like a lot of people that are building brands will be like, okay, I finished getting my product sampling. Now I need to think about my, you know, my marketing, or okay, my product arrived to get ready to sell. Now I do my photo shoots. It's like, actually, if you just slightly plan, a lot of these things can align with each other. Like I'm doing all my, like while I'm doing my product development, I'm doing my branding so that they can be side to side. Like while I'm doing my sampling, I'm doing all my logistics, my Shopify setup, my social media accounts go down. I think that like that framework of how do you think about your 9 months of brand or launch, and that's probably a good time frame, is like really important to have thought through before you start executing.
Are you segmenting it in like blocks? Is it 2 to 3 blocks of, okay.
It's like three phases.
Yeah. What are those three
phases? And so the first one is the like defining your product and defining your branding, which I think kind of good to happen simultaneously, where you're basically making your brief. Because they tie hand in hand, right? Where if you come up with a brand, but you haven't come up with your product, you might not be representing the product you actually end up with well. But if you come up with a product and you don't have your branding developed, then actually how you apply your brand to it might not be ready or might not be right. And so I do think it's nice to do those hand in hand, because in that product exercise of like, I'm going to make t-shirts. How do I stand out? I'm going to make a beverage. How do I stand out? I'm going to make a car or whatever. You know, like, how do I make it different or better? You're often thinking about how you provide a better consumer experience. And then you're really identifying your consumer. And then when you identify that, that's the toolkit you take to say, I'm going to build a brand that appeals to that consumer. And so I like doing that in like phase one, because then you go into your second phase, which is all about like your product sampling and your setup logistics. Like, oh, I'm going to go get trademarks and I'm going to go build my website or do all those. Like that can happen simultaneously. And you've already kind of identified your product and your branding from that first phase. And then your other phases are more like actual execution.
Yeah.
Once you define your product and define your brand, and products are going to change. Like the hardest part of that is like, if you're trying to quickly validate something and get product market fit, sometimes that could take longer. But phase two is about sampling and getting something done. Mm. And for people who haven't done that process before, usually like you hit up a manufacturer, And that's something else you can do in phase one is research manufacturers. And you're going to go, and I always recommend having more than one, right? Validate your options, make sure you're getting multiple quotes, even go through some of that process, just because you learn a lot by comparing how those things go. Because sometimes it's not always about price. It's about how easy you communicate with somebody or their actual finished delivered result. So in that phase two, you sample, right? Which means if you're getting a t-shirt that looks a certain way, you're getting one made. If you're getting a beverage, someone's making a mock-up version, you know, whatever that is. And that usually takes a couple rounds. Like people rarely nail it on the first try.
Yeah.
And you may actually make some different decisions. You may have defined something perfectly, but then when you have it, you experience it, you want to do it differently. And so on that phase, you're going to go through multiple rounds, could be one, could be five, of actually getting that better. And at the same time, you have that checklist of business logistics, which is, you know, do I need to get a trademark for this or a name and a logo? Do I need to get my social media accounts? Do I need to get my website? Who's going to ship my product? Do I need to have X amount of equipment? Like who's going to do the photography when we launch? What does that actually look like? And I usually define the pre-phase as this, especially for anyone starting a business right now, is like beginning to build your audience, which like kind of spans throughout this entire thing. But then you get to like your phase three, which is I'm ordering my product. You know, what do I do? Because ordering and production takes time. Mm. You know, if you're doing something overseas, assume it's going to take 30 days for it to get made. But then if you want to make the most money, you're going to ship it by boat versus shipping it by air, which means that's another 40 days, 45 days. And so there's this whole time period that you then want to be acting on, and you don't want to be sitting around waiting. So you want to make sure you're either having samples that are ready for you to produce or having mockups or having someone airship something so you can make content in between. Cause like you can launch prep while you are in production.
Yeah.
You're saving a ton of time, and people get into a rhythm of this as you have a brand where the new things that I'm developed are exiting sampling so I can begin promoting them while these things are produced so that the content can release at the same time. And you basically end up with this like rolling calendar, whether that's every like 6 months in a fashion collection or every month in like a drop, but like getting into that flow and that rhythm is like when people really lock in and they have that right with their manufacturing all the way to their content or the way to their cash flow, like that's when businesses hit their stride.
Are you phasing out the content as well during that period? Like, is there a phase for, okay, setting up for pre-launch, when something goes live?
And I think a lot of that really depends on like the type of business it is. Like some people, if you're building in public, you could show the whole thing. Some people may want to not have it. Like I don't even want to start, promoting it until I have it in hand and it's ready to sell. Yeah. And some people are building it up. And so it really depends on the strategy application you take. And I think, I always feel like there should be like at least some time period of like, even if it's 2 weeks of let's show something, make sure people are aware of it. And then we kind of launch it and continue. But so many businesses are so different, right? And if you're something that's on retail shelves, you're in constant marketing mode, no matter what,
Going back to phase one, when you're entering a saturated market, how are you thinking about differentiation, distinction? Because like, how are you thinking about it even for Valuable? Because in an era right now where there's so many Canva clothing is what I call it. Like brands that just rip designs on Canva, they print money and they build out like pretty good brands, but I don't think they're sustainable brands that are going to be here 10 years from now. They have a shelf life of maybe 2 years, a year and a half. How are you thinking about differentiating yourself and actually building out a brand versus just making cool products that that people just want to buy because it caught their eye on an ad?
Yeah. And so I think there's like three things that at least I'm working on in terms of what we're doing. And the first is I know because of the extensive time I've spent manufacturing things that like I can make things that are better than people expect from a quality perspective at prices that are less than what they're paying for the Canva brands. And so I always want to like exceed expectations on like what things look like. And we spend a ton of time on everything, like even the most basic things, like having them be excellent. And so that's number one, is if you establish a level of quality you can maintain, and especially if you can do quality at a value, that's even better. The second piece is like creator brands have almost two choices, right? One is like, if you are enough of a creator and you have enough connection and influence, you can move the zeitgeist in some way, you have a lot of advantage. But a lot of people assume they can and can't. I'm trying to basically evaluate that. I'm like, with the creator I have, can I just do stuff that I think is interesting and people are going to respond to it well enough that gets momentum? Yeah. And then what does it take to go beyond that? But I know that I can leverage the audience and connections I have to get it to a certain way. But the third is we're really establishing it with a particular culture. Like a lot of the brand that I'm based around is vehicle based. I have like a passion for that market. We're making accessories in that market. I'm doing collaborations from the beginning, like inside that market with brands that are in racing and in a few others. And if you're become a natural part of a subculture, whether that's hiking or outdoors or basketball or whatever it is, and you actually provide something that those people like and enjoy and has some additional value beyond just looking cool, and then you have the opportunity for longevity. And what's interesting about like, at least the brand I'm doing is I'm using it more as a vehicle for me to do interesting things, interesting collaborations, interesting ideas. And knowing that, my choices are different, right? It'd be different if I was making it purely to scale. But as a, when you're a designer or a creative and you start to build something, you often look at it as, okay, this is an extension of my portfolio, my ability to work left and right. And so you're more personally tied to it than when you're a pure entrepreneur. And it's good to know that from the beginning. Are you doing something that you are going to sacrifice some commercial opportunity because you, it's embracing your passion? Or are you doing something specifically to make money? Because those choices are very different.
Do you see Valuable as a brand that you're building out for the next 10, 20 years or as long as possible? Or because when I look at it and I see what you're doing with it, it's what you're saying. It seems like it's very you. Yeah. And that's why I'm curious if it's something that you're going to be building for 20 years.
I look
to come
at it. I think there's time frames to everything. You know, I look at like a Cold Wall is a brand I look up to a lot, which is by this designer, Samuel Ross. And he just sold it. And he'd been working on it. Yeah, A Cold Wall. And he had been, I think it was 9 years in, I believe. And it's one of those things where at the beginning of that period, like when I look at the next 10 years, do I say this is something that's very much an extension of me? Yes. Do I know who I'm going to be in five years, 10 years? Yeah. Absolutely not. So as a brand that is, and I think the goal is in those first 4 or 5 years, find out what it really is. What has resonance? Like what kind of works? Like for me as a creator, a lot of this is a vehicle to take shots on goal for product market fit. I have because I'm a crazy person, I wouldn't recommend anyone normal do this. Like I have basically 8 or 9 product categories I'm putting stuff in. And a lot of it's shots on goal to see what has product market fit. How can I use my audience and this product development to find a thing that I think will work at, has scale beyond what I can put out into the world? And I'm pretty sure one of those will work, right? And one of those, like that's going to be what we pivot the core of the business into, is embracing the thing that has product market fit. And so then I'll know too, if that's something I'm particularly passionate about and I'm loving, that could be longer. But everything I feel like has to be so fluid nowadays because people change and the environments with which we're advertising and promoting change. And so I think anyone that says I have a concrete plan for their brand at the beginning, you know, who isn't like a seasoned pro in a certain industry where they know what that exit looks like, I think you just have to be willing to adjust.
How are you going to test product market fit for all these different categories? What's your strategy there?
Yeah. And so I think it's about, for me, it's a combination of, I want to be able to test things on the platform that I have where I can do things organically without spending much money, but then also at the same time validated on the secondary platform where my presence as a influencer doesn't matter at all. And so for instance, like one of the things that we're working on is a bag product. And it's like, cool, I'm going to promote that on my Instagram and everything and see where that goes, see if there's popularity. But we're also going to do it on TikTok Shop. And I'm not going to be the major proponent of that. Other people are going to be promoting that on TikTok Shop. And I want to be able to see if it has legs beyond me and what I apply. And if it does, and it takes off inside an arena that's not just me, that has a lot more potential, right? Because I think a lot of creators start to see, oh, wow, I can move a lot more product than I thought. My audience likes me and likes the things I create more than I expected. But then they'll hit a ceiling they didn't expect because really that was just the benefit of their audience. And so it's very important to me to look at, you know, one of these products we're doing on Amazon, one of these products we're doing on TikTok Shop, some I'm trying to go right into retail, some I'm doing as collab vehicles. And having all of those options out there, I think is really important so that product market fit isn't in your head or because of your Instagram clout. It's because like actual consumers are responding to it.
What if one product takes off via your organic audience, but doesn't take off via TikTok Shop or vice versa?
Yeah. And so I think that's where that becomes like the way I look at it is I have like staple things or things I know I can continually sell over time and things that have bigger potential. Everything. Yeah. Well, look, I've thought a lot about it intentionally and I also work with like, it's not just me. It's people that I work with who we can evaluate it, push that back and forth. Like we have a team that thinks through it. But also when you go do something that has your name on it, you know, like I feel like you have to have that. And since I'm a person that talks about this and works on this all day, like I'm kind of trying to apply all these things to something I create so we can document it. But it's important as any creator or any person who's launching a brand to have some of those frameworks to think about how do I evaluate product market fit? What does success mean to me? What does my happiness look like versus the business's success? And ask those questions, not just before, but like during the process to ensure like you're going where you want to go.
Are you setting up a launch strategy as well? Because like looking at this, you have the drop model. Are you going to do something along the drop model or is it more like you're going to just randomly put out one day that, hey, like we have a few products in stock. How are you approaching?
I'm basically a combo, right? Where I'm starting with that because I want to kind of see, we've got some initial things we're basically testing and I'm going to kind of storytell around like, okay, here's this. It doesn't have the full custom packaging. It's not all quite there, but like, I think it's interesting. Like check it out. And then we're going to parlay some of the learnings from that into like a full drop. But I love the drop model for other businesses. I don't particularly like it for what I'm trying to do. You know, the drop model is great, right? Because there's a human psychology element to it where I have this thing, it's only available on this day. I get to be excited by participating in that and being one of the people to get it. And then I know that it kind of goes away from there. And so people play into consumer psychology well, works well with the algorithm to lean into drops. But I feel like because I make recurring content, I make content every day, I'm doing these things every day. For me, it makes sense to have things that are kind of readily available. Like maybe there's some things that are limited, but you know, when you're really going into scaled promotion, you want to be able to lean into the fact that like, all right, I know I can have UGC creators working every day. I'm putting stuff on TikTok shop. I think that's an important part of a brand to scale faster, to not be locked into specific drops.
How do you change the drop model though? Because every drop's nearly the same. It's a drop. It's going to happen this day. To get it, you need to be on this email list or this SMS list. Yeah. Have you thought about going back to intention? What is one thing I could do differently with my drop that nobody else is doing? You know, you don't have to completely out yourself.
No, but so this is an idea that Kane Calloway had, and he was on your pod, and I was on his pod the other day, and he had a great idea that I loved. And he was like, hey, we should do drops. Like, someone should build a mechanism where a drop unlocks at a certain number of content views. It's like, or you know, like, okay, cool. This video gets to 100,000, like the drop opens or whatever. And I thought, I was like, that's interesting. Like, that's and it may not be just about the content views. Like, what are the mechanisms you can use to unlock it? You know, so I think that's interesting. I think the concept of like personalization or re-release, or like this drop happens now, but then it triggers something in the future. You know, there's some interest around that. But I think overall, the drop model is great to sell a specific amount of things, specific amount of time, and to develop some level of like excitement around something rare. But for when you're really looking at how do I get a brand to 7 figures a month, unless you're a really specific type of brand or creator, like it almost, you do it for too long because you get that expectation of, oh, I just get this money every time this drop happens. It almost hinders your ability to grow otherwise, because that drop customer becomes less interested when things are readily available. And then you have to really shift your, it's a very different look to promote things ongoing every day than it is to build up to one launch.
Yeah, I feel that with Represent lately. And this isn't me, I'm a huge Represent fan, but it feels like they're doing drops nearly
every week.
Yeah, it's a few every week.
Yeah.
And it's getting to the point where like, I'm not looking at as many things because they're not as rare.
And that's cool. I think that's also part of them moving into like, that is a 7-figure a month brand. Yeah. And I think it is a, and
I think it's
and,
more at this point.
Yeah, probably more. And like, so I think there are, it's just a different set of parameters at play, right? Where it's like, it doesn't make sense anymore. Like, and also that rarity doesn't matter as much as people now, it turned from something where I was excited to get a specific item to, it's a uniform for a lot of people. Yeah. A lot of these guys just wear Represent wear a significant amount of their wardrobe. And so they want to have that continual availability. And I think that what something I think like they do smart is that they probably don't have a ton of inventory of most of these SKUs, right? Yeah. They are testing out what works. They're putting a lot of things out there. They know they have a customer that's looking for more stuff and has their sizing nailed, especially for guys, right? It's like you have a t-shirt you like or a hoodie you like, and you know it fits you right. You just continually buy the same thing. And they're giving you 100 options within that playbook 100%. Again and again and again, which I think is very savvy.
Is that just a smart transition of like you transition from the drop model to regular, like everything's in stock when it goes from something that's novel and that you wear often to it's now a uniform?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, that is the ideal scenario, right? I think a lot of brands will want to make that transition sooner, but, you know, and then also when you have the operations flow to really get that much stuff out there and to be working at things at that scale, or to have the demand level that you can order 1,000 of a thing, it's always going to be in stock. Yeah. Like so much of this right now is validation over time, because you can have a viral video or a viral moment or leverage your creator audience for a certain amount of time. But then after 90 days of that, like, oh, Meta ad spends have shifted, or this is that. Like, so your ability to have sustained demand over time now, I think, is the hardest things most brands face. Where like you can, if you're savvy enough between audience, TikTok shop, ads, whatever it is, you can figure out some way to move 100 of this or that all the time, right? But then when you really move to scale, you have to have known you have sustained demand and a brand across so many things.
And what's the content strategy for Valuable as you're prepping for a launch?
Yeah, and so I think a couple fold. Like one is obviously me storytelling in my same way I typically do, but just about how things are, how I've created these things and you know why they're interesting. And then we have some lifestyle content we're working on that's more, it's like vignettes, like things that work well on Instagram that are meant to not have, like I'm partially involved, but kind of moves beyond me. Yeah. This is why it's important to like have a team where I'm not trying to make, like I'm a part of this brand, but it's not just me. And where it's like, this has content that can live on its own that tells a certain story. And then really leaning into what, like wide networks of creators, right? And, because I have seen a lot of success with that with other products that I've worked on where I'm like, cool, if I can really get the right 10, 20 people making consistent video about this all the time, like that's what we want to scale into.
Is it going to be a different strategy for you than the brand, or how are you looking
at it? Because I want to, as a creator, you have to figure out how do you make content to sell something that's authentic to what you do. Mm-hmm. And so what I thought a lot about is my influence is really based upon value creation. Yeah. People don't follow me because I'm cool. People don't follow me because they like, because I'm beautiful or I dance or any of the things like you kind of see normal in my lifestyle.
Don't I appreciate say that.
But they're not following me for that reason. And so I really like it. They follow me because I create value for someone who's trying to be an entrepreneur or a designer or whatever that is. And so I'm just trying to continue that. But my examples turn from an example of I'm using of a third party to an example of something I'm doing myself. And I think that's a storytelling arc that's natural. And so I want to look at it that way, but I know that has a ceiling, right? If I was just to do that, and that was my entire impetus for moving the brand, that could be at one size. But instead, it's by expanding beyond that, you have a lot more opportunity.
I'm curious on this next question, because I've never seen you talk about this. I understand it. I think we've talked about it in group chats. What is algo market fit?
Yeah.
Especially if you are building up a brand, or in this case, like you're building up your personal brand and you're going to build up valuable. What is algo market fit, and how does it play into building up these brands?
I actually think this is a really interesting topic. So I'm glad you brought it up. And so algo market fit is like, algorithms are designed to show certain people things that they like.
Mm-hmm.
And it puts things into buckets. Stereotypes is probably mm-hmm. the best way to put it. And it recognizes certain aesthetic things. Like if you like minimalist design, if you like Southern iconography, if you are Christian, whatever, the algorithm has you in that bucket. And they have you in buckets of content types as well. But what I've noticed, and this is especially true in with women's wear brands I talk to, is there's certain brands that look a certain way that Instagram knows what to do with. And TikTok knows what to do with. And TikTok is a little more sophisticated than Instagram. But Instagram will basically be in this bucket of like, all right, you are a heartland look and feel. I have your audience. I will show them that content. If that content continues to perform for them, I will show them more of that content. And so if you are a brand that can fit into one of these aesthetics, and there's a wide variety of them, and the algorithm rewards what you're making, like you have like a massive cheat code right now. And so I think it's really like, I call the stereotype test for this, which is I basically like you look at common visual themes and then common age groups like Gen Z, millennial, Gen X, whatever. And then you look at like, okay, you know, minimalist or, you know, maximalist, gothic, Southern, whatever, like you put those buckets together. And if you can basically Venn diagram this person in this age and gender bracket and this visual style, if this is a thing where there's a bunch of content and existing things about it, like on Instagram or at least some world, then you have a lot of potential for success. And so, I wish it was something I could like diagram out better. It's a concept I've talked a lot about with you friends, but like isn't like super nailed in. Like that, it's a thing and brands are acting on it like in that way. And I think that that's something worth considering as you develop a content strategy.
Is it almost like SEO? Like, keyword research, but in this case, it's more visual.
Yeah, it's like visual SEO. I think it's a good way to do it. Exactly. It's like that's why I think an important exercise that I preach about a lot is like, look at other people's feeds. Like if someone will let you look at their Instagram reels, like go look at it because it looks radically different than yours. And I think, once you begin to have a catalog of that, and I wish there was a function or feature where it lets you to kind of just full explore, tailor something in.
Yeah.
You begin to really understand all these little sub worlds that are out there that people are into. And most often you see it with like your significant other. You know, it's the most likely person you are to like see some of their content because they're showing you what they see. But I think, it's its own, like visual SEO is an interesting way to put it.
This made me pause because I'm now trying to think about like, how do you, in theory, this is good. It's a good framework. It's a good thing to ideate around. And there's good inspiration to pull from, but how do you start like testing to see if you have algo market fit?
Yeah, I think it's about posting content, right? Because what's nice is you get immediate response to content. You can start a new Instagram account right now. And if you post good videos, you'll get thousands of views.
True.
And so I think like it's about burner Instagrams is the way to test everything, right? Like, and especially if you're a creator, you kind of know that like, okay, I know the format that works.
Yeah.
And so I would literally like, the best thing that can happen to anyone who's trying to sell a product, especially D2C right now, is that you can go make 15 videos, put them on TikTok, put them on Instagram and keep your same aesthetic style, keep your product out there, and then just see if it works, double validate it, start another account, do a similar thing. And you can really get a comfort level that things are going to move. And that is just a tool that is big companies and stuff just don't do and use. And you just didn't have even 2 years ago. And it's just a cheat code.
I like what you and Colin always talk about is, you should start a TikTok account and then just try to make 15 to 30 second videos to see until you find if you have algo market fit.
Yeah. Even with product market fit, even if it's like, you don't even have to have your product. You can be like, okay, get on the pre-order wait list. Yeah. If it's good, if you just do explainers, I made this t-shirt and is this quality and is this thing and is this fit, or, you know, I made this electronic gadget and it does this or X, Y, or I made this bag with this really specific pocket. And like you explain that 10 times and you are good enough at making content, you know, you make good content. If it doesn't move, you don't have a thing. Yeah. If it does move, you're like, and you're getting any level of success, like, oh, a couple thousand views. Oh, I got 20 people sign up the email list. You're like, okay, there's something. And really all you're trying to determine is something or nothing, you know?
Yeah. At what scale are you going to do product seeding for valuable at the beginning stages?
From the beginning. Well, a big part of it too, right now is like,
are you going 10 influencers? Or are you going to go try to hit 50? 100 creators.
What scale
are you trying to hit your influencer scene to kind of see like, do you have product market fit here?
You know, the interesting part about like what I'm doing is, again, it is tied so to me and what I'm interested in, what I'm doing is like, I'm doing a lot of it just to start, right? We got hundreds of things right off the bat just for me to give away to people, right? Because look, when you're a creator too, some of this is a flywheel. Like say I made no money off this brand. Say I put, you know, whatever amount in, say I ordered $50,000 worth of inventory. say I just gave it away. I couldn't sell a thing, but I was giving it to other influencers, all the friends, using it for contests, whatever it is. Just the storytelling of that and the expansion of that probably will end up with that much back in either followers or sponsored content or work. And so it's like, I feel like that's why being a creator is such a win-win-win. And like the more you do of almost anything, the more you get back in at least one of these multiple avenues you have for success, especially when it's like you have brand deals and you have products you sell and you have some level of like we have Cut 30 or whatever it is, all promotion that goes well helps everything.
Super interesting. One thing I thought was interesting that Midday Squares did when they launched and they did product seeding, they focused on one area. They only focused, it was either on Vancouver or Toronto because they wanted to feel like they were taking over that region, that area all at once. And they were the hottest thing to talk about. Smart. Do you think about that?
Not for my brand, but I have for other products. Cause I often encourage people to go regional. And I think we had this conversation in one of the first pods. Yeah. It's like, yo, go own the Northwest.
Yeah.
Especially if you're going to sell some stuff in retail stores, like dominate your region. Or especially if you're young and you have lots of friends, like obviously you get older, you get married, those things shrink, but like you're young and you're out and about and you know a lot of people in your region, like lock that down, be Houston's hottest, whatever it is. And again, for where I'm at and my audience being so distributed, not as concerned about it. I'm more concerned about like finding that visual fit. But yeah, like all of these are angles with which you can use to attack your business. And that's why it's like, again, such a good time to be able to attack any of this.
Build out the rest of the engine for me. So you test product market fit, you have it. What are you doing next to really scale the brand?
Yeah, I think once you have product, it's just putting foot on the gas as hard as you can, right? And so that's a lot about, it's a lot of inventory planning and forecasting of like, how many of these can we really sell? And how do I get those in stock and keep them in stock? And then what is that timeline of that? Like it takes X long for production, takes X long when I ship it. We're selling X volume now. Here's what seasonality looks like. Like a lot of it's like that forecasting. And then it's taking that data and talking to retail and being like, all right, I'm generating this much interest online. I'm moving this amount of units, but not every customer is an online consumer. I want you as the, Walmart as the authority in whatever to be able to carry X or Y, like, and trying to scale as hard as you can. Cause I do feel like things are so fast now, like trends and whatever it is. And people are so exploratory in brands. They find if you have something, you need to be very conscious of if your sales are going up and down and scale as hard as you can, as fast as you can. And the toolkit for that is really like, do I have enough cash? Do I have a relationship with my factory that I can do things on terms? And am I good enough at forecasting and adapting to be able to move and shift those numbers? If you can do all three of those things, like you're in a magic moment. And I feel like that's something where Ridge Wallet, and I talked with a lot online, like has the perfect scenario where they're doing that in the millions, where he has terms on his factory. He understands exactly what's happening in the market, if Meta's doing good or bad, or this is where working or not. They're adjusting that forecast and they're just pumping demand as hard as they can at each time and really moving on it. And like, and they're doing that in the, in the seven figures a month range.
Yeah. Outside of yourself, what are the other acquisition channels you're going to test?
So TikTok Shop, for sure. And Meta, all your standard Meta ads. That's really the main chunk to start is like, we'll focus on Meta. We'll focus on TikTok Shop for core products we think can work on TikTok Shop. And then myself and then influencer. And see where it goes.
Are you going to be the one creating the creative for the brand? Or
And that's why it's like, I'm a face and I'm a designer, but I feel like, especially with a creator and especially like someone who's doing a lot of things, I need to focus on the things I focus on during the day and like let specialists do what they do. And so there's other people who are handling seeding, who'll be handling content creation, handling working through that. And it's just, that's one of the benefits of as you work through all this and as you gain your network is like knowing who those people are that you feel can.
Do you think about layering in community into valuables or valuable at all?
Like I do, and I just don't want to do too much at once, but 100%. I have some pretty lofty plans for when the resources are there, but And I think can make it really interesting. So some ideas I think are cool with that. And, one of the first things we're going to do, I'll talk about was, all my designs are very tattoo inspired. And so we were going to do like, okay, here's the tattoo pack. Like anyone that gets the valuable tattoo, which, cause I think people are, one thing that's always surprised me is people are, don't realize just how often people just get random or stupid or whatever that is. Like we'll just do a tat. And so I think one of the things we're going to do is like anyone who gets like the first 100 people that ever get a valuable tattoo are like X for life. And like, you get product at cost or whatever we end up doing, like something like that, cool, where you're like locked in. Like, and so we have a lot of those interesting ideas, but I'm excited about building this thing, but I don't ever want to get cart before the horse or have the expectations where like, if something doesn't work, something to do X and Y, like, cause I have my hands in a lot of things. I want to scale it at the natural rhythm it is versus saying like, oh, I'm going to do these 8 community things and these meta ads and whatever. I know I can't succeed at all that out the gate.
No run club.
No run club. It's so funny. I walked by I was in the domain this morning. I walked by the Nike store. It's like run club Monday nights. I'm like, yeah, it's like, yeah.
Everybody has a run club right now.
Yeah. There's one at the barbershop by my house, which is sick. I'm just like, this is great. But like, it's a lot of run clubs.
Well, dude, I think that was the most fast paced episode I've ever hit. Yeah. I guess it was a sprint. It matched what you're trying to do on Instagram. Oren, where can everybody find you? Where can they find Valuable when it launches? Tell the people what they want.
At Oren Meets World, valuablestudios.com has the email list where we have everything on there. And yeah, it's that simple. And you can find me back on Sweat Equity in another moon, you know?
Yeah, probably another lunar next cycle. Month.
Yeah.
Q2.
Yeah. Q2 recap.
Yeah. Sweet. I appreciate you, man, for coming on, man. Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah.